Y'all ready to have a meeting? Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Melissa, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. This gives a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one would consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org we hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I just met this young man. Looking forward to hearing his story. Tonight's speaker is Brandon S. from the East Buford Group.
My name is Brandon. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Oh, I needed to do something like this. So I'm going to try and do my best to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. As a kid, I mean, I had a pretty good childhood. I mean, I don't have any complaints, really. It wasn't perfect, but overall, you know, I had a lot of good memories. So, I mean, that was cool, and, I don't think, really had much issues, up until, right before I got into high school. I grew up playing a lot of music. I'm a musician, and I was pretty obsessed with that, for most of my childhood and early adolescence. I think I was pretty serious about that, obsessive. That was like my first obsessive addiction for sure. Definitely helped me escape a lot of things. I remember right before I got into high school, I was taken advantage of by my piano teacher. After that, I remember starting to feel anxiety and weird stuff, you know, about myself after that experience. I went through high school, most of high school, without ever having a drink or using any kind of drug. And I kind of just threw myself into music and played more and practiced all day and just tried to be the best I could be and perfect at that. Hoping that would make myself feel better in the long run. My junior year, I got injured actually because I played a little too much and I hurt my hands. And I had to stop playing. I remember wasn't really sure what to do with myself at that point. All my friends I played music with, so I surely didn't have any friends to hang out with, cause they were all gigging and having fun, I had some friends that had dipped their toes in drinking and smoking pot, I always had a little bit of interest in that, just it seemed kind of cool, the whole musician thing, like a lot of them do that kind of stuff, so I thought that'd be a good chance for me to maybe explore some of that, leading up to that, I had some depression and anxiety in high school. After I stopped playing, I would come home and just lay in bed all day and not do much. I got introduced to a certain substance shortly before I started drinking alcohol. I remember the first time I had that. I felt pretty great. All that anxiety and depression went away pretty quickly, and I found my new thing for sure. shortly after that, I found my first drink. I was actually on a boat with a friend, and was trying to introduce him to this new green leaf that I found. And he had a bottle, and he gave me some of that, and that was really nice. I can't forget how that felt, you know, going down, and like the burning, that bite. I really liked that, and I just felt like at ease, you know, and I felt okay. So, So I just kind of chased that, you know. For me, the disease progressed pretty quickly. Within, you know, a few weeks of me having those that first hit and that first drink, I was pretty much doing all I could to do that every day. And pretty quickly I did that, you know. I did as much as possible. It helped me go to sleep. It helped me wake up. it just helped me what I thought was functioning, which for that, I mean, that didn't, I don't think I ever really functioned. I could lie and tell myself from the beginning I functioned okay, but I did not, definitely did not. So by the time, you know, I was a senior in high school, I was doing that every day, and I started getting in trouble in school. I started doing some other stuff to kind of afford my habit and make some money that's not legal. And I got pretty involved with that for a while. And I kept doing that, and things progressed. And remember, I was at the beginning of high school. I was living with my parents, and the first time they found out everything that I was doing, they weren't okay with it. They weren't okay with me doing that and staying with them, so they made one of those ultimatums, I had to pick either drinking and using or staying with them, and I picked drinking or using. So for pretty much the rest of my high school senior year, I was in and out of my parents, living in cars, staying with friends, sneaking into houses, doing whatever I could do to make sure I could keep drinking and using. I kept getting in trouble in school. I would get in trouble with my girlfriend a lot. She didn't like what I was doing at the time. Just kept doing that for a while until eventually I got kicked out like a week before graduation, because I got caught doing the illegal stuff I was involved in at school. So that skyrocketed a lot of things, and my girlfriend at the time broke up with me, and that definitely catapulted me and brought me towards my first bottom. That summer after my senior year was pretty rough. I ended up in some pretty rough places. I'd been doing business with some pretty rough people. I still don't understand how I got involved with them, but they were not just alcoholics, like real bad people. And so I got mixed up with them, and I just went super downhill pretty fast, and was doing a lot of different stuff on top of drinking, and I just couldn't stop. And one day it got to the point where I had slept in a few days and was doing a lot of crazy things, making a lot of terroristic threats. That was a trend for me in my sobriety, in my using, and in my drinking. God, I hope not. I hope that doesn't ever happen again. That was a trend in my drinking, was calling people on the phone to tell them that I was going to go kill them. So, not a great look. So eventually, you know, my roommates that I was with at the time were kind of tired of that, because it was bringing a lot of attention to what we were doing at the house. So they basically kidnapped me and brought me to Northside Hospital, and had my, well, this is my second visit to the hospital, and been there before, but it wasn't as bad, I guess. But yeah, they strapped me down to the table, and at some point I woke up and I was in Ridgeview and was there for a few weeks in the psych ward. That was interesting. But eventually I convinced them that I was okay enough for them to release me, I guess. after maybe 3 weeks of being there, they let me out, and at that point I didn't want to go back to what I was doing exactly. So I told my parents and my family, I'm like, okay, I'll quit, and I'll stop. And I stopped for a while, and I moved in with my sister and lived with them for a while, and I went to rehab, and I started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and didn't really think I was an alcoholic, thought I just had issues with about half of the drugs that I was doing, the other half I still didn't think I had an issue with. So in my head I was like, I'll just get sober and clean for a while and then I'll be okay, right? Just get parents off my back, get them so they're not super suspicious, and then I'll do my thing. And I got a sponsor, and I went through a good amount of steps, and I never called anybody. I would leave right after the meeting, jet out, and I just talked to him, and I was pretty lonely, so I did that for about 6 or 7 months, would just call him, didn't really have many friends, didn't really do a first step. No wonder the rest of the steps didn't work. I guess I got to the ninth step, and at this point, I had started playing music again. My hands issues weren't as bad, and I started reaching out to old friends, and one night after a gig, they had an after party, and they're like, "You can come, man, if you want. We know you're coming off all that stuff, and you don't have to come because we're going to be drinking. It's totally understandable. You don't have to come." And I was like, "No, I'll be okay. I won't drink." And then we went to Waffle House before the party. And by the time I got from the concert hall to the Waffle House, I convinced myself that I could just have one drink. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm just going to have one drink. It's all good. I'm not an alcoholic. Be fine." And my friends were like, "Okay, all right. If you think you can do that, sure. That's fine. It's cool." They don't know. I got to the party, had that drink, and then I had another one, and I had another one, and I got pretty drunk, and I stopped counting after 6, and I remember I was drinking other people's leftovers, and that kind of started it all over again, and I don't know, I always think about that now, since I've been sober, and since I came back in, I remember, going into that situation really believing in my heart that I was just going to have one. I really thought that was what was going to happen. And just as soon as I had that first one, it's off to the races, I can't control it. I don't know what's going to happen when I drink. It's scary, really. I really don't know what's going to happen. that for me is a big reminder, I just don't know. Anytime I did try to control it, which I did, there was a few times I tried to control and I could have one or two, and I was miserable. I hated that. That sucked. God, having one or two drinks is almost worse than having no drinks. God, it's terrible. I see my sister and Norm, I have normie friends, and they'll take a drink or half a drink, and they'll just let it sit on the table, and I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me. That's just not, it doesn't comprehend. So I did that, and a few weeks later, I was starting to do the other half of the substances that I thought I could do, and I started drinking as much as I could, and I just started doing that. I thought I was okay for a while. I went back and I got my high school diploma. I went through an alternative school and got it, and I went GSU let me go to their school. Surprisingly, I had to write a letter and everything because all the stuff in my high school record. But they let me in, so I started going. And I went to college, and I was there for like a month. I was like, man, I'm doing it. I'm really managing all this stuff, and I don't know. It just seemed like a few weeks before I got sober, everything just kind of went downhill. I was playing this gig in Norcross twice a week, and I started to notice that my drinking was affecting my playing because I heard some recordings, and I was like, ooh, that does not sound good. So I decided to stop drinking, and that was really hard, and that was about 3 weeks before I got sober. And so then I just started relying on the other stuff, and at some point that stuff just stopped working. It just did not work anymore. And I also have bipolar 2, or bipolar 1, I guess. And I had stopped taking my meds for that, and I started going pretty crazy the last week, and I was at work, and I went off on some people at work, and one of those terroristic threats came up and involved a knife, a kitchen knife. So that wasn't a good look. And I ended up, that was bad. And I called the restaurant owner, because they were telling me I had to go home and that I needed to chill out. And the restaurant owner was in the program, and I called him and said all this shit about how he needed to call a sponsor or something like that. Anyway, I ended up at a friend's house, just crazy as hell, and my brother-in-law picked me up and brought me home, and I stayed up all night and just going crazy, had a manic episode, and the next day, still up, all this stuff happened. I thought my sister was trying to kill me, and I blockaded everything against the door, and I was throwing shit out the window and screaming, and the neighbors, I think, were a little concerned. So the cops came, and actually ran towards the cops. I was really excited they're there for some reason. I don't know why, but I think it was obvious to the cop that I was a little too excited he was there, and he called the ambulance. And the ambulance took me back to the ward, so that was fun. Eventually, the first night once I woke up from all the booty juice, I guess that's what they call it. I don't remember that medical thing, but whatever that is. Once I woke up from that, I remember a lady coming to talk to me, and she was like, man, you're gonna die if you keep doing this shit. And she pointed out some other people in the ward, that guy comes in every week. It's you're gonna end up like him, I guarantee you, if you don't get your shit together. And I thought about that a little bit that night. I still wasn't come down all the way from my manic stuff, so I had to go to the quiet room that night, but a few more shots of booty juice. Later, the next day, I started thinking about it, and I'm like, man, this is not normal. This is the third time I'm here at a psych ward in the last 2 years, and it's just, none of my friends, this isn't happening to anybody else around me. I have got other friends that drink too, and this is not happening to them. There's something wrong here. And, I was like, I think I need to go back to AA when I get out. And I think I have an issue here. So eventually after this 72 hours, they only held me there for that long. So I guess that's progress. I don't know. they let me out. I walked home, and I stayed with people for the first 2 weeks, and I went to meetings, and people drove me to meetings, and I walked to meetings. And my sister didn't. They didn't really want me over there the first 2 weeks because they were pretty upset about everything. And my parents were pretty upset. And after 2 weeks, you know, my dad called me and said, hey, if you go to treatment one more time, you know, we'll pay for it, and you can stay with us until you find a place while you're in treatment. So I did that, and did the rehab thing again. But I started going to meetings more, and I ended up going to a halfway house. And, about 2 or 3 months in to sobriety, my sobriety date is September 18th, 2018. So 2018, I had a few months sobriety, and I was in a halfway house, and I was going to meetings a little bit, but I still wasn't really doing much besides going to meetings. And remember, I was kind of dating a girl when I came in still, and I was like on and off. That was a terrible relationship. Eventually I cut that off, and I just got to this point where, remember, I was sitting on my bed and I was just so depressed and just so unhappy. And I'm like, man, this just sucks. And it's like, I know I can't go back and drink because I know that that's not going to work anymore, but I just don't know how to do the sobriety thing. And I think at some point around there, I was like, okay, I'm going to start taking the suggestions and doing the things that everyone keeps talking about. Because everyone in AA seems, not everyone, but people that have been sober for a while seem to be pretty happy and enjoying their life. So it's got to be possible. So pretty soon after that, I called my old sponsor from the first time. And I had seen his truck at 8111, but I didn't see him. So I called him and said, yeah, we do this men's book study in the basement. And I went down to that, and that's where I met my sponsor that I went through the steps with when I got sober. He was at that meeting, and I talked to them and loaded all my bullshit on them. And they were some good AA guys. I got their numbers, and I was going to ask one of them to sponsor me, but the guy that I ended up sponsoring, he called me the next day. So I just asked him because I didn't want to wait around. And, so he told me to call him every day and that we need to start going through the book. So, we set a day, and, he came in and picked me up. And I remember the first day vividly. He picked me up in his truck, and I get in there, and he's like, hey, I have a gun on me, just so you know. It's right here. And I was like, okay. And then he continued to drive to this river. And we sat by this river, and we talked for an hour. But I remember he was just like, you know, I know who you worked with last time. I know your sponsor. We talked. He's like, he told me you're a pretty shady guy, and I know about the pot using and the drinking. And he's like, if you're gonna work with me, you've got to be done with that shit. And if you're not done, then there's no point of us fucking going through the steps. And I took that to heart, and I was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. So that was, I guess, my first step when I came in, and. We started going through the book and through the steps, and it was kind of like a 1-2-3 punch the way that we did it. You know, we read through the book and read through all that stuff, and I had done I kneeled and said the third step prayer with my first sponsor. I don't remember if we did something like that or not. I think we just prayed when we got to that chapter, but. But we went through 4 and 5, and I remember he gave me 2 weeks to do that, and he said, just write as much as you can, just get everything out, and just get it done. And so that's what I did. I sat down and I just wrote until I couldn't think of anything else. And after 2 weeks, he's like, are you ready? And I was like, I think so. And I was like, I can't think of anything else. And he's like, well, then let's do it. So we did the fifth step, and it was really good. I remember, like, after that, I remember hearing people in meetings with, like, these long, like, 100-page fourth steps, and just would, like, compare myself, because mine wasn't that long, and just get up in my head about it, and compare myself, and anyway, at this point, in almost 6 years of sobriety, I probably got about that much pages combined from before I came in and since I've been sober, so, but yeah, so, we did that, and, you know, 6 and 7, went through that, and, Alice laid down the book, and 8 and 9, and step 8, we went through that. It's so important to go through all of it with a sponsor, but for me, that was so good to do that process with somebody, because, he just showed me how to go about it. Like I wrote out my list, and he went through it with me, and he said, these you need to do it right now. These, you need to do later. And there was one that he's like, you don't need to make amends. And that was my piano teacher that, you know, took advantage of me. I thought I owed him an amends. So that's a good sponsor, I think. You know, somebody that can, you know, talk through that stuff and, you know, show you what you need to do. Someone's got a lot of experience, so. But yeah, so, did that, and, yeah, I had a lot of good, 9-step experiences. I don't think it was until I started doing my amends that I really started to feel any kind of connection with God. You know, before that, I was just putting in the footwork, you know, just doing the action, praying in the morning, praying at night, and just doing it because that's what people said to do. But yeah, I remember the one amends that really made a big difference for me the first time going through the steps with him was the guy threatening at the kitchen right before I came in. I ended up calling the manager and asking if I could meet with him one-on-one and the kitchen manager who I threatened. And he said, yeah, you can come in. We can talk. And right before I headed in, headed over there, he was like, hey, the kitchen guy doesn't want to talk to you. Yeah, he doesn't want to talk to you. I was like, that's okay. Can I still talk to you? And he said, yeah. So I went there and, you know, I made amends to him the way that my sponsor showed me how to. You know, the way that I make amends is, you know, I try to look them in the eye and say, you know, I was wrong. I try not to say I'm sorry just because I'd said that so much. I know some people that do, and that's okay. That's just not how I do it personally. So I went up to him and, you know, I said, I was wrong for doing all those things that I did and for saying this to you and calling you up and taking your inventory. And I told him all the stuff I was doing in the parking lot and, you know, was able to look him in the eye and make that right. I think that's so important, you know, to do those in-person amends. They're so powerful, and just a lot of healing that comes from that. But, yeah, so we did that, and that was really good. And he asked the guy to come out. Or he said, he told me, let me see if I can get the kitchen guy to come out. And the kitchen guy came out, and he looked kind of, I mean, he didn't look super happy to see me. He looked a little sketched out, which is understandable. But I got to make amends to him and, you know, look him in the eye and, you know, make that right with him. And, you know, we both kind of teared up. And he gave me a hug and he forgave me. And, it was just really, really cool, that whole experience. And he left and the manager, you know, told me before I left, he's like, you know, I've known that guy for, like, 6 or 7 years and I've never seen him like that. Like, that meant a lot. And so that was definitely, I went out of my car and I just felt like at peace, you know, finally after doing that. And really feeling like I think there is a God, and, you know, I felt that connection. And really was like, I think this is going to work. And I've had a bunch of other cool amends experiences since then. But yeah, just that's really for me where a good bit of the healing really started. But yeah, so that's kind of what happened. Somewhere between the fourth step and after going through those amends, I really started to feel that psychic change where that obsession left. You know, when I was drinking and using, like the way that I think of the obsession is I was thinking about it. I was either thinking about it, I was doing it, or I was coming off of it. It was always those three things. Like, it was always that cycle. And at some point after, you know, getting through a chunk of the steps, after the ninth step, I felt free from that. Like, I wasn't thinking about drinking all day, every day. But still, every once in a while, yeah, I have a thought pop up. Still today, I'll have a thought pop up. But it's passing, you know, it's not the obsession. So that's cool. I mean, that's definitely the biggest gift out of many gifts that I've gotten from AA. That's the biggest one, being finally released from that shit. That shit sucks. That's terrible. God, that is just, that's hell right there. But yeah, so, and then 10, 11, and 12, you know, 10's a, those are all daily things, you know, for me that I have to do. I gotta watch my thought life, and I gotta catch when my thoughts are going towards not so good places, and when I do slip up and do something that I regret, I gotta make that right, you know. And I gotta talk to people a lot, I gotta pray, and I gotta do all that kind of stuff every day. To maintain my condition and to grow, you know. Those steps are growth and maintenance steps, you know. They're both for me. But yeah, so continue to do that. And 11, you know, waking up in the morning, still do that every day. And I try to pray, say a lot of the big book prayers, you know, third step prayer, the 11 step prayer, serenity prayer, and a lot of times these days I just talk and, you know, just ask God that I can trust Him more and rely upon Him more. And I try to say that throughout the day too. Developing that relationship with the higher power has changed over the course of my sobriety, and what my conception of that thing when I came in is different than it is now. And, I'm really happy for good sponsorship. My sponsor told me, when we were going through the steps, you know, it's nobody's business what your higher power is. You know, just find something that works for you and you know, pursue it and grow. And I think that's really important, you know. I try not to tell anybody what they should or should not believe. You know, it's all our own path with that. But yeah, I want to talk about what it's been like now since I've been in sobriety, because a lot of good things and a lot of mainly good things have happened. You know, I've had some tough things too. I'll start with a few good things. When I was like in my first like 2 years of sobriety, I started getting interested in like traveling and road tripping, and I like went on my first like solo road trip in like 2 years of sobriety, and that was really cool and a lot of fun. And I started getting interested in things, and I decided to I got really interested in like cultures and languages, and I started going back to college for that. This is like during right after 2021, I went back to school, and so I've been able to go to college and get back to that and pursue different interests that have been really cool. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do that without the program and without AA. And I've had a lot of cool opportunities come from that. That's a total blessing. Family, there's definitely been some growth there. I definitely get along way better with my family now. The first couple of years was kind of up and down. I had to do a lot of inventory about like my dad. I had like all this built up resentment my dad for a long time. And you know, I worked on that a lot. Did him towards somebody, and he had me do all these actions, like because I actually moved back in with my parents when I was like 2 years sober, and that's when I started going back to college too. So that was like a huge adjustment, trying to figure out how to live with them. There's a spiritual teacher that talks about like if you think that you're spiritual and super calm and peaceful, go spend a weekend with your parents and see how you feel after that. So yeah, I've been kind of living that the past 4 years. But it's definitely adjustment. But I've really tried to apply the things that he taught me about that. He told me to, you know, just find ways to spend time with them and just be nice. Just be nice to your parents, right? What a crazy idea that is. So I just tried to start being nice, and I tried to find ways of being service to them. You know, I just tried to be the best house guest possible. I try to clean up like really well, and even if I, because they're OCD as hell. So I just try to, you know, serve and just do whatever I can to be helpful. And my dad likes to tell these really bad jokes, and I used to just make fun of him all the time for it and be an asshole. So I just start laughing at his jokes, even though I didn't think they were funny. And that in itself did a lot, actually. I don't know, that and being nice to him and just trying to find ways to connect just really improved our relationship a lot. Still having boundaries, for sure, but yeah, now actually, sometimes he makes jokes and I actually think they're kind of funny now, so I don't know what that's going to tell me. But yeah, now, I mean, another thing AA taught me is just like how to get along with people. I mean, like the traditions are so important and so helpful. You know, the principles before personalities. You know, me and my parents, we don't like religious, politics, all that stuff. Complete opposite. Like we don't see eye to eye in that at all. And but I found a way to connect with them and find other ways to, you know, be of service and be have a relationship with them, and we get along today. You know. And that goes for, like, my whole family. You know, our whole family is probably split on lots of different things, a lot of outside issues. But because of AA and the program and showing me how to love people and, you know, take those issues out, you know, it's really helped me a lot grow my relationships with family and people outside. So that's been helpful. that's really cool to see. I've been able to do like other cool stuff. Like I went to Ecuador a few years ago, and studied there for a bit. Actually ended up in the hospital, from a dancing in the club incident. So dancing in the club sober, definitely possible and a lot of fun, or can be a lot of fun. once you're ready for that. it's cool. Like, you know, once that session left and, you know, being released from that, I'm able to go anywhere in the world and hang out with anybody, and I don't have that desire to drink anymore. I mean, that's just really cool to me. Of course, I have to be careful and be mindful where my head's at, and I've got to make sure I'm in good spiritual conditions before I do certain things, but, there's no limit, so... Ecuador was awesome. I ended up in the hospital. that was cool. They really took care of me there. I mean, it was cool, and I was at peace the whole time I was there, and I had a great experience, you know. I think if that happened when I was younger, when I was still drinking, I would have just found all the negatives in that situation, but, I mean, it was great. I mean, I missed out on a few things, but it was cool. I was in Ecuador, you know. And then, Yeah, I've been able to do some other stuff. Like, I just got back from Spain. I was over there for a few months studying, and that was really cool. But I'm going to jump back also from, like 2 years ago. I had some kind of hard stuff going on in sobriety. I was, like, working a lot, and was, like, doing this intense sales job and working, like, 70, 80 hours a week. And I was, like, barely hitting one meeting a week and just wasn't taking care of myself. And I ended up in a psych ward in sobriety because I wanted to kill myself. And I checked myself in there. And, yeah, so things went off the rail a few years ago, for sure. And, you know, I got out and I had to go through the steps again, and I had to take some actions, and, you know, I had some more growth and some more things I had to learn. Going through the steps again with a new sponsor, because my sponsor had been with me, had moved, so I was with a new sponsor at this point, and that was a really great experience. That was some really cool stuff. I got to look at new character defects that have popped up, and one of them was like perfectionism. And I think up until I got into AA, I always heard like perfectionism is like a good thing, right? Like it means you're a perfectionist. Like it's what I heard growing up. I realized it was really a character defect, and I heard this guy on a speaker tape talk about it. And he said the perfectionist really sees himself as a failure deep down inside. And that hit me so hard. Because, you know, all my life and through sobriety, I just want, you know, I want to make, do all control and put my hands on however I can make this thing perfect. And if it's not perfect, it's not good enough. So that came out in that fourth step, you know, and I had a lot of pride stuff going on too, because like, I got in that sales job and I left my parents' house and I didn't want to go back and tell them I failed and just had all this ego shit going on. So I thought it'd be a good idea. Suicide sounded like a better idea than going and just admitting that I'd failed. So I definitely had some pride stuff that I had to look at, and, you know, I was like, why is that so important? So that was good. I just didn't really, I found myself at a point of sobriety where I just didn't love myself that much. I just didn't like who I was. And, you know, I had all this stuff, this bull crap going on where it's like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I've got all this mental health issues. Like, why? Like, why did God do this? Why did this? Blah, blah, blah. And, a lot of that stuff came out in the fourth step. And, you know, now through that process, you know, I've realized, you know, yeah, these are realities about who I am, but I'm able to help people because of it now. You know, because I'm an alcoholic, I can help somebody else that's an alcoholic. When I'm working with somebody new in the program that has bipolar or some kind of mental health, you know, I'm like, hey, like, I've got that too, but I don't have to drink. And, you know, I'm okay. I take meds. I take care of myself. I do this, this, and this. And, like, you know, I'm okay most days, you know. So it's really, that has kind of flipped, you know. I'm really grateful now that's part of who I am now. You know, it's really a blessing. The professionalism stuff, yeah. So I'm my second language is Spanish. So the last year or two, that has been like my cross to bear, I guess, because like learning to speak another language and being in another country and speaking that second language. I mean, you just have to find some acceptance at some point that you're not going to speak correctly all the time. Like that's just been like a tool lately that I've just like. I just got to be okay with not being perfect. And that's really been a huge teacher in my life. You know, saying stuff that sounds ridiculous and getting laughed at and being like, it's okay. And just keep going. And, I think that's really helped me a lot with that stuff. But, yeah, it's something I still have to continue looking out for. And I feel like I'm doing a little better about it these days. Yeah, and then I guess like, what, I got like 1 or 2 minutes left? What, maybe? I don't know. Is that 1 or 2 minutes? So I just got back from Spain, and that was really great, and that was an awesome experience. I'm really grateful for it. I really grew and changed a lot through that experience. And I got to go to meetings in Spain, too, and that was really cool. And I've got some Spaniards now that are on my AA directory, and that was cool. And I've been trying to hit Spanish-speaking meetings since I've been in the U.S., too, to try to just build that community as well. But that was really cool. The end of the trip was kind of rough. I was in a pretty serious relationship like the last year, a little over a year, which was really great. But it actually ended. She came over to Spain, and we actually broke up in Spain. So that was pretty tough, and I'm still kind of dealing with that and dealing with all the feelings and all the grieving of that. But yeah, that's so now I'm kind of in a new stage right now of growth. Hopefully there's some growth that comes out of it. Through all that, I haven't had to take a drink, and the relationship ended, I guess, just as bad as good they can. I mean, there was no crazy fights or anything bad that happened, and that's pretty big deal for someone like me, because in the past, in my using, I mean, if we broke up, I mean, I was gonna cuss you out and break your shit and like not be cool at all. AA has definitely given me some cool tools to work with. sometimes things don't work out, and it's not personal, you know. It's just like, you know, that's a big thing I've learned since I've been sober, is not everything's so personal, you know. And just learning to understand that and have grace on myself, and not beat myself up too much. And my last sponsor, last time I went through the steps, he had me do this prayer that I try to say most days. I kind of stopped for a while, but I'm trying to do it again. It's like, God loves you, God made you this way, and he loves you. You're not your own. And I try to repeat that to myself a lot, because I need that, you know. And some mirror work helps too, you know. That's also helpful. I know it's coming, about to come to a close, so just wanted to maybe read something out of the book. One more thing. I've been doing service work too lately, and that's been cool. Like I took the GSR position for my group, and so now I'm like learning about all that stuff. So that's like another layer that's been really cool. And service work, I mean, that's like just a great way to stay involved, and like, you know, service work keeps you sober. So even though I'm not feeling great most days, the last few weeks, I'm not feeling great most days, but I try to stay active and calling people, and I'm trying to be the best servant, I guess, I can, and doing that combined with prayer, and hoping that'll get me to the other side. Yeah, I just want to read something real quick, and I'll close out. It says, this is page 33, about more about alcoholism. It says, young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop, as he did, on their own willpower. We doubt if many of them can do it, because none will really want to stop. And hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. Some of our crowd, men of 30 or less, have been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere. And when I read that coming in, it just that just really helped me as somebody young, because I just wanted to find all the differences. And thanks, guys, for having me up here.
Thank you once again, Brandon, for your story. It was very inspirational for me, and I heard a lot of the similarities in my story and your story. Piper, would you like to come out and give the chips, please?
Hi, my name is Piper. I'm a garden variety alcoholic.
Hey, Piper.
In this system, we have chips to mark your time in sobriety. It kind of helps you remember where you're at and thankful for the days that you've had already and more to look forward to. This white chip is for, a lot of people say 24 hours, but honestly, even if you have alcohol in your breath right now and you're deciding that you want what we have and are willing to start taking the steps, I would come and get this now. Silver chip for 30 days. Gold for 60 days, 2 months. 90 days.
Thank you.